something, something firing range.
Let me stop you right there. Let me just stop you right there. All right. And say we have reached the end of season one, final episode.
Yeah.
You're all in the feels about it, I can tell.
I almost forgot we were recording today.
That's how unimpressed you are with our podcast.
That's not true. I've been looking forward to this, get this season over with. Because you know it's going to be the worst one we ever do, and it was a good one.
Season one will be the worst one?
I think it will be, but that's a good thing because we killed it.
Yeah, I read in The Art of the Sart about a year and a half ago that you should always be embarrassed of the first version of your product.
Yeah, the dude, what is the director's name? Scorsese says that.
Same thing?
If you don't physically vomit at your first cut or the stuff you've previously done, you're not doing it right.
Well, here's something that we've done in this last episode to step up our game a little bit. We've brought in the infamous Justin Atkison.
What, the dude that was in episode two?
Yeah. I mean, the last time we heard from him, we also heard from, which we're going to get some explanation from in this episode, a lot of clinking. And I think it was because they were using the specialty metal things to chill the whiskey.
That's actually true. Chase tried to play it off as we were on the shooting range, which we were for a part, but right. Most of the clanking was actually not.
So the reason I'm intrigued by this is because I've thought about investing in those, but is it as annoying in person as it seemed to have all that
no,
clanking?
No, it's actually really gratifying in person, but apparently, you know, through your earbuds.
Yeah.
When you put it right beside the mic, that's when it's usually its most obnoxious.
Yeah, yeah. So here's what I want to know. As we're wrapping up this entire season, no pressure on the three of us right here to figure out maybe some of the high points or the big things, because we just spent 10 episodes investigating basically a 2-minute scene from a Netflix series, right?
Yeah.
So what are we taking away here? I think this is a question that a lot of the people who have followed through season one, I don't know that they're really looking for like this. Here's the main point of all these weeks. But there has to be some high points to some things that we figured out that if we share with the hanger men that are listening and hanger women, as we always say, that'll be valuable to take away. So why don't we start there?
If we could, drop back and punt, because I am an avid consumer of the podcast, okay. And I'm a little confused with the whole season one comment, because you guys have been doing this for 2 years. So what makes this season one as opposed to everything that happened before?
It's good. I'll let Chase take that, because he has aptly named all the episodes before seasons.
Yeah, every episode before this season is called the Hanger BS. You know, because it was before seasons.
Right.
Clearly. For no other reason.
no other reason at all.
Yep.
Yeah. So, go ahead. Yeah,
no, you go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I interrupt. You go ahead.
Yeah, well, the funny part of it calling it BS is because, like, we usually had, like, you know, a direction we were going, but as far as, like, a forward sequence of events happening with, like, the, you know, the point of the episodes, it was just an episode-by-episode basis. And finally, Ben said one day, we're doing a good job, but we can do better. And
that's exactly how it sounded.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He's very, like...
Like just a manager at a grocery store.
Yeah. I mean, Cammy said you were direct in that episode.
That's right.
That is true.
We're doing a good job,
damn,
but we could
torpedoes.
Be doing better.
Yeah.
Right.
But with no, like, direction of, like, we could do better. Let me know when we are.
This is how I improve things. Like, hey, I just had a feeling on the way into work today. We could do better.
But no, he actually did give us some direction and his idea that we kind of unpacked a little bit, and it became what we are now calling season one, because it's the first true season we've had of the Hanger.
Yeah.
And also such a racy play on words with BC before Christ, BS before season.
Before seasons.
Man, that's progressive.
Yeah, it's what we do here. Cutting
loose
edge stuff.
And the secondary.
That's right.
I think it is very clearly just my idea. I don't think it was kind of throw around. It was just a, eh.
Yeah, that was Chase in front of his laptop being cheeky.
Nailed it.
Yeah. So we get into this idea of seasons, and really what we figured out is the way that we consume podcasts, the ones that are like, that really have an impact on us, which is what we're trying to recreate, are the ones that we can listen to as a whole. You know, you listen to 3 or 4 episodes and it doesn't feel like it's just guys behind a mic just trying to figure some things out, which we pepper some of that in still and will as we continue in the season format and some episodes between the seasons. But yeah, the idea was let's do 10 episodes that we can record all pretty tightly together that center around one theme and trying to figure that out. And I think a lot of what led to that was trying to replicate when we're sitting down in circles with Hangerman in a group format, it feels like the conversation doesn't stop each week. It kind of pauses and then continues as we move on. So
absolutely.
A little bit of mimicking our culture, trying to do that digitally. So it's led to a lot of stuff. And I don't know. I think after 9 episodes, I feel like this, the impact of that one moment watching Truckee try to figure out how to ride that horse actually did play out. I didn't feel like we got lost in any of our episodes. If we had done 20, maybe. But I feel like we held a pretty good line.
Yeah, I feel like it's challenged us to even further think out where episode directions are going. Like, for the first time, we scoped out 10 whole episodes, at least, you know, what we wanted from each episode before we even recorded episode 1 of this season. We'd never done anything like that, you know?
Yeah, it was, agreed.
Yeah.
So anyway. The thing with John Wayne is a great example. Like, we would have been talking about initiation or what it feels like to feel shame. And,
yeah.
You know, a lot of stuff that we loop back to a lot because it is important, but I feel like after a while it would feel a little bit directionless, and we never would have stumbled on, wait a minute, why do we even celebrate John Wayne in the first place?
Right.
And so digging into that a little bit was very helpful for me. So
I think a perfect segue here, that was my favorite episode of this season.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I was a big fan of it. It was difficult to write.
Well, it was the first one we've ever done like that, too. Like, that was, like, our truest, like, cinematic, quote-unquote, even though that doesn't make any sense, because it's definitely not cinema.
It's definitely not cinema.
Yeah, it had, like, a movement to it that we've never done before.
Yeah.
And such an iconic character to dive into. I mean, you know, spanning generations, everybody recognizes who that guy is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you feel about that episode?
Man, I really, I think I was on the treadmill, or I know I was in the gym listening to that, and that's usually where I listen to these podcasts, which is great, kind of what you were talking about before, not just doing the 2 or 3 podcasts and then you're completely changing topics. But John Wayne really hit home. I mean, you know, my dad's a lot older, so probably other people my age, I probably watched a little bit older, mostly Westerns, that kind of stuff. Still predominantly what's watched in our house. So, man, I really just clung to that definition of a man. And then what a twist towards the end of it when you're like, you know, but that's really only skin deep. That's really not the depth that we're looking for out of this hanger experience, you know, as we're growing and becoming the men that God would have us to be. You know, we're called to be even more than this icon that Hollywood convinced multiple generations of American men that I mean, that's as far as it gets. Once you're John Wayne, there's nothing beyond that.
Right. And he definitely owned it, you know. And I don't know if we use this word during the episode, but for me, this attacking of the masculine facade is a lot of what we're out for at the hangar, you know. And inside of Christian circles and outside of Christian circles, it feels like the first thing you need to get right to have a masculine journey or be a man is have the masculine facade. And then after that, there's not a lot of direction and also not a lot of accountability. I mean, if you just present as a man, that's kind of enough. And what we're saying and have been saying in several different ways as the episodes have gone on, we keep getting back to this. The interior is important, is extremely important because of what it guides, you know. I mean, I could figure out, and this is, it's great to have you sitting in on this one, Justin. I could figure out how to dress like a military guy. You know, I mean, all the stuff's available online somewhere. But that's just the facade, you know, and I feel like most people would not choose to do that. Why? Because it's disrespectful to the people who have earned the ability to be able to wear that uniform and the stuff that goes with it. But we don't approach masculinity the same way. And I think a lot of it is because we just don't have a lot of respect for it, even ourselves.
And I think that's a great example of it, though. And, you know, people that do dress up as if they've served in the military, you know, generally, despite all the information online, don't get all the medals in the right place and all that. So they're usually pretty easy to identify. Mm. And, I mean, the phrase that goes along with that, stolen valor, it's all over the internet. You know, there's a lot of watch groups right now that are calling these people out and posting their pictures and
I've
names
seen that,
and all that
yeah.
kind of stuff online. Actually, even a pastor here in Natchez was called out this past week.
Did not know that.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
Feel free to look it up. Not a special forces guy.
We will
out.
Now. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, I think that does extend to our brothers and fathers and friends. And I mean, we see a lot of stolen valor, especially in adolescence, right? Because in high school, especially in the South, all it took was being, John Wayne just meant that you were on the varsity football team or, some school soccer or whatever.
Yeah.
But some measurable success with the opposite sex, with sports and academics, and you're good, right? And that's the same fallacy that the Jeremiah Johnson movies and John Wayne movies and all that. You get the protagonist, antagonist, the love story, the war to fight, or all that kind of stuff, and then this great loss, and then the credits roll. And looking at Jeremiah Johnson or John Wayne, you don't ever see that guy come home and have like a balanced life with his wife and three healthy kids.
Cooking mac and cheese.
You know? That's so true.
Rambo is walking by himself. All his friends are dead, and he's walking alone. Drizzling rain in Seattle, Washington, like. That I think that really does ring true in all of our lives. We're so isolated and don't know how to proceed with family and interpersonal relationships and that kind of thing.
Yeah, that's a miserable place to be. And it's one I think we need to prepare for and prepare to avoid. I mean, it's much easier, I think, initially to steal it. And maybe all men probably go through this point in their journey where they're trying to figure out, all right, how do I grab on to this masculine lifestyle? And I'm feeling like I'm floating out there in the middle of nowhere with nobody. What is something I can do to establish my identity? And a big part of the problem is many of us don't ever leave that. We attach to those things and we don't ever get below the surface, and I think it's really tragic too, that as you're speaking with men, when you start to have that conversation, like what's going on below the surface, there's tons of fear that happens with that, like, oh man, that's not the kind of conversation I'm out for. Even though those guys have a lot going on beneath the surface, mm-hmm. between the years, they just don't want to talk about that sort of thing. And a lot of it's because of what's been propped up. I mean, I think when I think about John Wayne, maybe to wrap up talking about this one episode, but when I think about John Wayne, I think it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there.
Right.
I mean, to go watch it and think about it and like, oh man, that guy's just bad A, cool. That's awesome to see. And he ripped that guy off the horse and slung him down in the mud pit and embarrassed him. I wish I could do that, but to live there, it's just not sustainable. And it's not sustainable for a reason. Right. I mean, God has designed it to be so much more complex than that. So when we grab onto that one thing, it's what sells tickets, but it certainly doesn't make for a masculine life,
Yeah.
So where do we go from here? We got John Wayne. I mean, some other things. I mean, I feel like we talked a lot about Truckee, but at the same time, I'm a little bit haunted that we didn't really satisfy that. I mean, so much more happens with this guy than just that one scene.
Yeah.
I mean, what are we forgetting?
Well, I mean, the finale is based around, Truckee trying to do more than he's able, taking the horse down the hill, knowing, what not to do, crossing the limbs and stuff like that, where the horse breaks his legs.
Yeah.
And that gets him in trouble. Like that's what causes the whole finale with Frank and Roy to happen, because Roy's having to go save Truckee again,
So I started to speak up and say, and kind of defend the fact that so much time and effort has been spent on that scene in the corral with Truckee, because that's his moment of initiation. That's, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the fork in the road where either I get back on or I don't. This mm-hmm. is a significant emotional event, and there's no slipping back into the shadows and letting people think, either I do or I don't. It's binary at that point. But I think I realize, as you were saying that, when he later goes across the broken terrain, the horse, ends up paying for his adolescent decision.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it's a series of coming of age events, and maybe it's a journey that you don't ever actually fully complete. There's always going to have to be somebody there, and for us, obviously, as Christians, God and that relationship. But Roy, even later on, after Truckee has seemingly learned all these lessons, still makes a mistake and has to pay the ultimate, or potentially pay the ultimate price if the gunfight goes the other direction.
Yeah. So it's not just a fork. Like, there is a fork, but it's like the fork doesn't equal smooth sailing.
Yeah.
Once you take that right or left.
Or once you take the right, the destination is just like 500 yards up the road. Yeah. It just keeps on going. One scene that I noticed, I was going back over this about 2 weeks ago, just watching it in my downtime, which I don't know, I must be a disturbed guy. I keep going back to this. Something's unsettled about Godless for me, but I'm watching where these guys roll up, and this guy, he always plays the bad guy in these Westerns, and he is so good at it. I can't remember his name, but hats off to him as an actor, because I really feel like if I ran across him somewhere, I would want to put my hands around his throat. He's such a good bad guy. But he spits on him, you know, spits his tobacco on him, and Roy's there, and he's like, you need to stay calm, you know, and he doesn't have any guns, and, like, Roy teaches him which battles to choose in that moment, and that was a big scene for me. And then, yeah, you can go back to the scene where Roy's trying to teach him, yeah, you don't want to take a horse through this, or you need to be easy when you do it, and then... Man, did I feel for this kid, like when you said, what was the term that you used, is juvenile decision?
Yeah,
adolescent decision. Yeah, when I saw that happen, I'm like, oh my gosh, I've been there so many times in my life.
We've been over this, man.
That's right. But I'm saying that to myself. I'm like, here's something is like going to lose its life, tons of carnage, and I've been over this internally, and I knew better. But I was distracted by what was going on in the moment, or I think the way that this guy wrote that scene, there's a little foreshadowing, because when he's learning it in the beginning, he kind of blows off. Roy's trying to teach him that, and he blows it off because he's curious about something else. I'm like, man, that's been Ben Derrick for a lot of years in his adult life. I'm curious about this thing. Somebody's trying to teach me about another thing, and I'm just not listening. It never goes into the headspace. So, you know, I think this may be a really, really big assertion here, but I think without Truckee, you don't really have Godless for me.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because as much as I would want to identify with Roy, or as much as I want to be angry at Frank, or I want to see the town defended at the end, because you know that's coming, I think the thing that has captured me, and maybe this speaks more to my journey than the two of you, but I think the thing that captured me so much was watching this young man throughout these episodes grow and mature, and the fight that it was to do that. It's just felt a lot like my life over the past probably 4 to 5 years, you know, but I'm admitting that may be very personal.
No, I think it is accurate. I think the appeal of a lot of Western protagonists is them taking lesser men under their wing and showing them, you know, the ropes. I think John Wayne probably did that countless times. I think Absolutely. He did it in True Grit with the, the one that Matt Damon played later. I can't remember his name, but
yeah, I'm sure Texas Ranger.
Yeah. I'm sure there's countless instances where John Wayne's done something like that or similar.
Also a guitar player. He was played by Glenn Campbell the first time.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah.
the Rhinestone Cowboy?
Yeah, he was.
The Wichita about, lineman?
You think about Blue Bonnet in Open Range?
Yeah.
Which the bad guy or the crappy guy from Godless is in. Yeah, he plays.
I'll never forget that line. It's Blue Bonnet.
What? your name's Blue Bonnet.
What does he say about, I was smoking that cigar, it's got me all jumpier.
Got me all riled up. The cigar you gave me.
There's so many good lines.
My dad's favorite is when Kevin Costner shoots the mirror behind the bar. Marksman there is Charlie Waite.
Yeah. Whiskey bar keep. Yeah. Yeah, man, what a scene. Maybe we should do another 10 weeks on Open Range.
I could unpack Open Range. That's a great movie.
I think our audience would be like, yeah, we heard this the first time when it was Godless. Thanks. Yeah. But, yeah, just the different ways that we're watching these characters develop. And that's one of the beautiful things about art. You know, we don't talk about that a lot on this podcast, but being able to see your own life in somebody else's story, you know, it's really crafted in Hollywood and intentional to allow you to make those connections. But this happens when you sit down with other men and hear their story. And it's not a movie, but when you hear another man describe a story, you find yourself in their story. And being able to unpack that with each other, pretty big thing, you know. So maybe part of what we've missed, though, in these episodes, now that you're pointing it out, Chase, is this mentoring, this investment. It feels like, as you mentioned it, I was just trying to pay attention to how I was feeling, that's missing in our culture today. I wonder, can we bat that around for a minute? Why is that?
I don't know. Not offhand. Maybe if we unpack it a little bit.
Yeah, I mean...
So what are you saying exactly is missing?
Well,
culture?
Just this person's gone before me. They know things that I don't know. They're willing to take the time to invest in me and teach me those things. You know, I mean, I got a few things rolling around in my mind right now. The first is we don't have a lot of life and death scenarios going on. Yep. As they did back then. It's like, hey, you definitely don't want to venture off this far.
It's because, not the Oregon Trail.
Yeah, you will.
You Chase will was die. Bitten by a snake. Ben broke his leg. Lose 2 days.
Dysentery.
Dysentery. That's always the one.
I feel like it's, this isn't all of it, but it's something we've called out before. I think there's just been a failure of previous generations to show that they're worthy leaders sometimes. Not everybody, like, you know, we all three, I feel like, actually, I don't know Justin's story as well, but Ben and I, we've talked about how our fathers, you know, even though they weren't perfect, they at least had some examples for us through childhood and even now, like, you know, that are worth following.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of guys out there that don't have that. And so they have, if you don't get it from your dad or your uncle or older brother or something like that, then why would you look for it later in life, you know?
Yeah. Or who would cross over that gap to do that for you?
Yeah.
And how would you know how to receive it?
Exactly.
You
know,
that's, right.
That's a big thing. I think part of it is they don't know how to give it. Another part is we don't know how to receive it.
Right.
Because we're not watching it go on, you know. But if you think back to all these older stories, I mean, even going back to, what is it, 50s television? When was Leave It to Beaver? Was that the 60s?
50s.
Yeah. You know, and then you've got Dennis the Menace. It's not only his dad, but there's the guy next door who's kind of acting like his dad, too. You
Mr.
know?
Wilson, isn't that right?
Mr. Wilson?
I think that's right.
I think that's Home Improvement.
But
I think it's also Mr. Wilson.
Though. Yeah. Was that the same guy?
Oh, my gosh. We did see his face.
That's funny.
But, yeah, it's not built into culture, you know? I mean, so I think the reason I'm wanting to talk about this now is because if we can identify a couple of the reasons why it's disappeared or it's not highlighted, then maybe we could soften men towards this approach to other men. Hey, let me reach in here and teach you something about how this is supposed to go. In fact, if you were to dig into listen to a lot of John Eldridge, that's a big thing that caused him to start his entire masculine journey as an adult, is he got so frustrated because his father checked out, and these are his words, not mine, but his father checked out, and he didn't know how to do very basic things. And he got so angry about that that it led to this huge, huge thing that now we know is this gigantic worldwide ministry. But there's something in me, though, that hesitates. Even the kid across the street that I see struggling with something, I'm like, oh, I don't know if that's my place, if I should go over there and do that. That's a weird thing that we should probably correct.
So I have kind of a leading question in the same vein.
Sure.
To me, there's three main characters, right? Truckee, Roy, and Frank.
Yeah. And then
three men, three distinct different sheriff. Areas in their life. Or
yeah,
their
the
time,
sheriff. I would say, main though. When you get to the sheriff and like the Downton Abbey girl.
Well, this is my question, so there's three in mine.
Okay, yeah, that's your question.
Truckee, Roy, and Frank.
Yes.
Who do you guys feel like you more align with, just naturally? Like, Ben, you've kind of already said you gravitate towards Truckee. I mean, who are you most like?
I see myself mostly in Truckee's story.
Okay.
Most like, I would probably say, I don't know, this is dangerous to say, but I had the same experience with Saving Private Ryan. I identified with a sniper. Yeah. And I couldn't figure out, is that because I want to be a sniper? Or I don't know. But later on, I discovered I was really most like the guy that was always putting the sand in the cans. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Can't remember the character's name. But so initially, I would say probably Roy, because I feel like I didn't get everything I needed growing up or even wanted. But I'm trying to figure out how to make a difference and do right. But I'm the kind of guy that will experience kindness from other people and walk out of the cabin and forget to say thank you and then beat myself up about it. I'm going to be really clunky with the world of women, just like Roy was. And then in the end, which we don't really have an explanation for, just kind of ride off and let that be somebody else's life. So yeah, I think probably right now sitting on this couch, I would say Roy.
Mine's hard.
He was. Did you see how deep in thought he was over there?
Well, yeah.
Welcome back, Chase.
I don't think he listened to you at all. He was,
I did.
Wait for his turn.
It's so hard because, like, you know, Truckee didn't have anyone until he had Roy. But like, I've had my dad my whole life.
So you gotta check Truckee off, probably.
Yeah, I didn't. Well, I mean, Roy's the same way. Roy had to find somebody because he was an orphan beforehand.
You have two arms. You can't be Frank.
That's right. Like, yeah. I don't want to play like the
outlier. Glasses. Maybe you're like early onset in the in the sheriff's story.
Maybe I'm the marshal that gets shot in the face in the bar.
Like, hey, I'm just here for a drink.
Yeah.
Pa-cow! You were really pissed when that happened.
Oh, God, it broke my heart, man.
Yeah.
I was so ready for him to have just this awesome moment later on, mainly because he's Charlie from Newsroom, and I loved him that whole series.
Yeah.
I really don't know how to answer that question, Justin.
So I would say just in general terms, at least what I've heard, because most of the conversation has been about Truckee and coming of age and validation, is that we've got a lot of guys between the age of 25 and Ben's probably nearing 40.
Yeah,
he is.
A few weeks. Yeah, a few weeks.
What's that like? Different podcast.
Yeah.
Next season.
No, but let's continue.
But we... The whole season, the majority of the time has kind of been spent talking about Truckee coming of age and getting validation, and a lot of the other, like the conversation with Cammy, was about this adolescent need for validation that by the time we're Roy's age, we should probably not need anymore. We should be leading
validating others.
And validating others. Yeah. And there's a lot of us that are still waiting for that. Now, I would say most, you know, Frank was the only senior. He was the senior pastor in that church. So,
yeah, he was.
There's your future. No, but I think that's the reality, is that in all these movies, in all these questions that we're having and answers, these discussions we're having in our small groups, is we have a lot of guys that are still dealing with questions that we feel like should have been answered 10, 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And have really slowed down our forward progression.
Yeah,
we should be learning lessons from Roy's interactions with women, and we're all kind of still stuck on Truckee getting on the horse.
Definitely. Yeah, that's a really valid point. So listen to you speak, I'm thinking maybe Chase was the most genuine here between the two of us in answering this question with being caught up, because it depends. It really depends.
Really relate to the part of Roy where he had to leave behind the crowd he was with to find something better, even if it meant going solo for a bit.
I know that.
Like, I did the whole episode on that.
Yeah.
Whatever it was, 7.
Yeah. That was an awesome line, by the way, when you take the shot. Yeah. Didn't you say take it? I was like, oh, man. Way to go, Chase. I stood up in my car and clapped a little bit.
It's dangerous.
It was dangerous.
You want 240.
It was worth it. But, yeah, so my answer, probably, if it were to be very genuine, which is what we try to be here, it depends on the area.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, like probably with my marriage, I'm a little Truckee. Probably with my kids, I'm a little Frank.
Yeah.
You know, right. So
I do think we have to point out that there are positive sides to Frank, even though he's
absolutely.
Yeah. Like that dude knows how to take control when he has to take control.
I'm super intrigued. Tell me more. Like, all right. Well, so control.
I mean, if you look at his little band of who he had going with him, there is not a single person in that group that I would trust to lead out that gang. Other than Frank, and he knew it, so he did what he had to do.
They weren't weak people.
No.
The people he was leading.
But they were not equipped to be leaders like he was. And I think he knew where his place was, and so he took it.
Yeah, man, that's intriguing.
I've got to believe that at one point, Frank's heart was in the right place.
Yeah, well, when he took in Roy, I don't think he was just trying to, you know, take in as good of a thief as he possibly could. I don't think that was it. I think he was really craving having a father-son relationship with a boy of his own, because he probably knew good and well he wasn't about to get a woman with the situation he was in. So it's like, this is my shot, and I'm going to bring this kid up in a way that I know I can lead him.
Yeah.
But what a testament to how crooked you can get even when you start place.
Sure.
Yeah.
Which I think, and really kind of how you answered that it's situational. What part of my life am I, Frank or Roy or Truckee? I think that comes back to what we were initially talking about with Truckee having the fork in the road in the corral. Do I get on the horse or do I not? The reality is you're going to have a lot of forks in the road. And even if you choose the wrong path early on, doesn't mean you can't be on the right later.
You can still see the other road.
And even if you're on the right early on, you still got to continue to make those right decisions later.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's never settled or solved. You know, I mean, we could carry this thought even further. I think maybe some of the stuff I was assigning to Roy, I'm even more like the sheriff on, you know. I mean, I can distinctly remember in my teenage years being just like the sheriff. I should have looked up her name. What's the girl's name on the in the series anyway, who has the ranch.
The British actress,
British actress. Yeah. I think I just noticed with him, I saw myself a lot with him. He's like, I want her attention. I've kind of let her know how I feel, but I feel like a little bit of an idiot. Here's this gunslinger. I'm going blind. I mean, this is all but over. But he just can't let it go. And he, you know, I don't know. I think it would be a good thing to teach men to ask this very question. When you're watching a movie and you're like, man, what a great movie. To think about, where do you find yourself in that story? And not just give one answer, but think about all the major characters and even some of the non-major characters. Like, what is this Hollywood character who is carefully crafted and well executed? What are they telling you about your own story? That could be, I think, for a lot of men, a lot easier to answer than, how does this verse out of the Bible connect to your day? You know?
Yeah.
Could be a great place to start. I think, and here's another thing, and another thing. I think we don't respect God enough as a storyteller. I mean, God is a storyteller. I mean, look at our lives.
But we're the ones that put verses in the Bible. It was just right. Words. It was just sentence after sentence, not, and here's verse 14, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it certainly helped Lifeway. Boom. Got it in right there on the last season, episode of the season. But yeah, we broke all that up. But I'm saying, even if you... And I definitely don't want to go back to these couple of episodes, but even if you had to throw the Bible out, you know, you couldn't find a Bible anymore. Respecting God as a storyteller, looking at the lives of other men. I mean, let's just talk about for a second the sort of impact that's been made. And you're talking to a guy right now that makes speeches in churches professionally on a weekly basis. Let's measure that against sitting down with a man and learning his story. I mean, I would really like to hear the comparison there. As far as life impact.
Oh. I think it depends on, if it's early stages, that dude is going to care a lot more about you sitting down and taking the time to hear what he has to say instead of shouting stuff from a stage at him.
Yeah, absolutely. But at some point, invariably, he's going to transition to needing to have the growth and the structure of, you know, a lesson that you've taking the time to craft. And
yeah, it does kind of turn into training, you know. And I, as a guy on the inside, though, I think, man, I have seen so much more life change in men, especially inside of the hangar, from sharing life, from looking at the story that God is writing over another man. And even a guy who is, if we could say this on our podcast, even a guy who's spiritually immature.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah.
Just like, mm-hmm. Okay, well, I kind of don't know my way around the Bible. I'm not really sure the habits of a Jesus-following man, any of that.
I just know I'm supposed to show up on Sundays.
That's right. That's right. You know, where the coffee's mediocre and, you know, the jokes are kind of funny. Even that man can sit in a group of other men and listen to a man's story and say, there it is.
Right.
That you took a left there when you should have taken a right. Mm. You know, how do we know that? It's built into us. God's a storyteller. The way he chooses to communicate through the Bible is mostly through story. If you were to really dig into it, it's mostly story. I mean, we've become bad in our Western mindset about pulling out principles. But think about the life of Jesus. Is this okay to do this? I'm going to do it anyway.
It's your podcast.
Think about the life of Jesus. How did Jesus communicate points?
Oftentimes, one-on-one, yeah.
Yeah, story, one-on-one and story. And he wasn't like, well, listen, if you'll turn over to Isaiah, you know, I mean, he had the Sermon on the Mount. That's a pretty big deal. I don't want to downplay that, you know, just in case Jesus is listening. But he's communicating through story a lot, you know. And I think the fact that we can walk around inside this story godless and find ourselves, that should tell us a much bigger lesson. It isn't just about a series.
Yes.
The end.
Agreed.
All right, so let's. I mean, this is our last shot. After this, we're not allowed to speak about godless any longer. So, what's something else we haven't examined?
Well,
or something?
I'm curious what your favorite episode is. I said mine.
Favorite episode. You know, I will. Let me back into this answer. I was really looking forward to what was going to happen in the town. You know, like, this is going to be a big deal because I'm about to
see... No, not your favorite episode of Godless, your favorite episode of this season.
Oh, well, let me answer the first one first.
Okay.
I think I was just watching this the other day. Is it two where the episode that you described where he lays down the horse and... That was one of my favorites, where we're talking about the sheriff walking up the hill and interacting with the Indian.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's episode 2.
Yeah. Some, maybe. I can't remember.
Yeah, of the show. Yeah. My favorite episode, this is going to sound so arrogant. I don't remember the number, but where I had an opportunity to describe a really embarrassing moment in my life. Was that 9? Was that the last one?
Yeah, I think that was the most embarrassing.
You're looking at me like, we literally just recorded that. That was my favorite.
Is that
the
one with Cammy? Huh? Is that the one with Cammy?
The one after.
Oh, one after.
The one after, yeah.
After? Yeah.
Yeah. The reason it was my favorite is because I was testing something in myself and I passed. And I don't get that feeling very often. I mean,
Meaning that you were over that, the embarrassment, or what? What were you?
Yeah.
If you can disclose.
Yeah, that I could learn a lesson from it and not get caught in it. I'm really bad about that. I get caught up in things. In fact, the other night, I had this experience. I think I shared this with you. I went back to a place in my past where I grew up.
Right.
And I didn't realize it when I was walking around the building, but it shook me up a lot. I figured it out as I was trying to go to sleep that night. I don't know if you guys have ever had this happen to you, but when life gets quiet and you're trying to go to sleep, finally your brain gets to say all that stuff it's been waiting to say all day.
Yeah.
And man, I just got, I actually thought as I was laying there, this is just a barrage of memories of shame. And it started with some things that happened in that building and it just kept going. And through that exercise of writing that episode, I realized, you know what, I can talk about things in my past that are embarrassing and not do the thing that I normally do, and that's tell them as a funny story to try to deflect how I'm really feeling.
Yeah.
I can get in there, wrestle with it, be honest about it, let other people know about it, and say, I was a kid and I've moved on. You know, not only that, though, I've been able to do this over the past week about things that happened 2 months ago. You know what? I was growing and I've moved on. I made a mistake and I've moved on. It's not my responsibility or within my ability to get everything right. So that episode to me, after I listened to it, I'm like, man, I'm super proud that I was able to do that, because 6 months ago, I probably couldn't have. Mm.
I think that in and of itself is a skill set that you actually have to learn. It just doesn't come naturally, as to accept a failure or, you know, something embarrassing. Learn something from it, but then let it go. That's the hardest part, is just letting it stay in the past.
Man, yeah. Yeah. I mean, how many guys are listening to this right now? And there's a list of stuff they've got in their mind. Like, I can't let that go. I remember I failed at this, I failed at that, yeah. You know?
I think that's why it's so important at like Truckee's age that you get back on the horse. I mean, just like you're identifying now, you know, stuff from earlier in life. Man, if you the rest of your life have to go back past that corral and see the spot you were standing where you made the turn to the right, then the left.
Man. I'm glad you brought this guy on.
Yeah. Whose idea was this? I think it was his.
Probably. He just showed up. Hey, I'm on it.
No, we invited him.
So what's your favorite episode, Justin? How about both, you know, of this season and then also this season of Godless?
Oh, man. Well, I think Cammy and just about everybody else that's been on here has said that the Truckee season was their favorite, so...
The Truckee episode. It is a good one.
Yeah.
But I'd have to say, man, when he drops the horse and fights behind it, man, that's straight out of
awesome.
That's Robert Duvall style.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. So, there was a. I wonder if the writer was trying to do a little bit of that with Lonesome Dove.
And, oh, absolutely.
Yeah. That was.
You can't write a Western without having elements of Lonesome Dove in it.
Yeah. Things are just too good.
Right. And then, I mean, I've brought it up several times as far as this season, definitely the impact of having an uninitiated man versus an initiated man, as told by Cammy Derrick.
She really did kill it.
Yeah, she did a great job. Episode.
Yeah, she did. She did a great job. Well, my wife, you know, she doesn't pull any punches. She was actually very reserved on the podcast compared to the conversations we have behind closed doors. But yeah, it was tough for her. I'll admit it was tough for her the main thing she was worried about, and I was so proud of this and I don't deserve it. She was like, you know what? I don't want to run you down publicly. I'm not really willing to do that. And I was like, no, you have to. We have to talk about this honestly. And she was really worried about recording something going out to the world, you know, all 3 or 4 million listeners that we have on a weekly basis. It's like, I don't want to talk bad about you in public. I feel like she did a pretty good job there, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I hope it hit all the other listeners as much as it did me. I mean, 'cause I think when we walk away from interaction with significant others, that kind of thing, that's always what's hanging in the back of our head of, you know, how do you see me, or what impact do I have? What's it like to be in a relationship with me?
Mm.
So appreciate both of you guys for having the,
huevos.
The huevos. I was trying to think of a,
right,
one that podcast both. Capable, yeah. Appropriate. But yeah, for having the huevos to be honest and put that out for the rest of us to benefit from.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what feels great about this is it does feel like kind of the post game.
Yeah.
You know, like we're rolling through how it was, you know, even just processing for other guys.
Yeah. We're back at, you know, Ed's basement after the game.
Yeah.
It's like, wow.
Ed definitely has a man cave.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know what? I'm actually struggling though to remember some of the other episodes. To be honest,
we had the McCain one. The McCain one was good. Like, that's one of the ones that we definitely like. I know is the only one of this series that we slapped together day of,
mm-hmm.
and it still turned out great. Just because I think we had such a good pulse on the season.
That's reminder true. For the listeners: what was the McCain?
I forgot about the McCain episode.
You go ahead.
Yeah, just talking about the things that he had done, the things that he had been through, and he didn't forget who he was. I mean, being a POW for as long as he was, and having that prestige and status. And then it's stripped from him, but the same people try to give it back to him to manipulate him. And he was like, hell no, you're not going to do that to me. You know, it's more important to me what happens for the people around me than it is for what happens to me.
Right.
You know, and I think he was able to, I mean, you know, this is pretty ridiculous for me to be sitting here comfortable talking about what that guy went through. But it seems to me that he was able to put himself in a future if he had made that decision. To be set free, he was able to put himself in the future and say, I won't be able to live with myself if I do that. You know, something that another ability I don't know that a lot of us have, especially thinking about what his self-preservation impulse must have been like in that moment.
Yeah.
You know, but some of you guys, can I ask a military question? Is that all right?
Yeah, of course.
There is a certain part of military training that puts you in situations like you can ring the bell or you cannot.
Absolutely.
That stuff's all over the place. But I'm wondering if a guy who had that kind of pedigree that was a pilot actually had to go through that, or if he just had it internally.
We know Vietnam, which interesting because there was certainly no shortage of POWs after the First or Second World Wars or Korea, but it just seemed like late 70s, early 80s, the Army in particular, Army and Air Force, started the SEER school, Survival, Escape, Resistance, Evasion, based on all of those, especially Colonel Nick Rowe's experiences as a POW. And there are probably, I'm just throwing this number out there, just estimating with Special Operations Community and Aviation, probably I'd say 25% of the military that goes through training based on those guys' sacrifices and experiences.
So maybe as a pilot, there was like, we needed to prepare you for this because if you get shot down, this is definitely your future.
Sure.
Yeah. So maybe he had gone through some prior training of what that was going to be like. But, you know, the Geneva Convention, I'm sure it was ignored. You know, it's been ignored since it
Absolutely.
Came into play. But it seems like in that particular war, it was a joke. You know, we will do what we want to do. So, yeah, but I think digging into McCain's story, it's one of those things where we have to, in my opinion, as men, we have to set these stories up that we want to strive to be like. You know, that's something that actually you don't need a community for that, really. This is one of these things that you can do individually to look at the lives of particular men and say, that guy has or had something that I want, and I'm going to figure out how to get there. I mean,
right.
I've got those guys. You guys have those guys already built in?
Oh, yeah. A lot of them are vain sometimes, you know, but like there's a soiree of cool guys out there in the world that you're like, man, that's fine. That's good right there.
Say no more. Man.
Even in your example, I mean, in John McCain's family, you know, the military pedigree, he certainly grew up with role models in his house and hanging on the wall. And
no
oddly
doubt.
Enough, and I thought about this listening to that particular podcast, Camp McCain the military training area here in Mississippi is named after his father. So there was a little bit of a pedigree there, and McCain trained in Meridian as well.
So. Yeah. So another one of those guys I have, I mean, McCain turned into one of those. That's what was so surprising, is that he turned into one of those guys. But I've got on the wall of my office, I got a picture of Abraham Lincoln, one of the famous portraits of post-Civil War Lincoln, and just what leadership cost him and the internal anguish that this guy had. Even if he had just been a farmer in Illinois, he would have been struggling with his mental game, just kind of his lot in life. But his ability to lead through what I would say some of the hardest days for America, before and after, you know, up until this point. And to see that guy kind of have this little wry smile of relief that the true test was over, and then to know he's literally days from someone murdering him, you know. So Abraham Lincoln's always been one of those guys for me that I've really thought, man, if I could sit down and, you know, that question that people ask, if you could have lunch with anybody from, you know, Abraham Lincoln always makes my list, and people mock it a little bit, but can you imagine the conversation you would have with that guy? Crazy. Yeah. So do you have a guy, you have a list of guys?
Oh man. Yeah. I mean, my list, probably like both of you guys, started at home. Man, I've always wanted to sit down with Schwarzkopf, and not just because of the Saturday Night Live skits. But you talk about leadership and making some hard decisions. We take some of that for granted now after 2 decades of war almost in Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
But you know, early '90s, it was a new concept. You had adults that were far removed from Vietnam. And those guys, I joined the military when there was already a war going on, and have spent most of my career with everybody around me has either one or multiple deployments. We were talking about the 80s rolling into the early 90s. These guys came of age and trained for war in a time that there was none. I mean, they showed up for fall camp and practiced all season every fall and never got to play any football games, you know? And
yeah. Then, Jocko talks about that in his,
And then 10, 15 years, 20 years into their career, man, they're standing at the brink of the Super Bowl, and stepping up in a situation like that, that's just dynamic leadership with no safety net.
Mm.
Yeah, it's for all the coins.
Yeah. So I think we're attracted to that because there's actually, and this connects back to Guileless a little more, there's actually a leader in all of us. And my proposal is that we're all actually leading something. We're either leading it well or not, you know. But when we see guys that are exercising good leadership, there's just something really, really attractive about that. And it's my vision, my dream, that we would be able to have hangermen that are leading the things that they're involved with well, no matter what it is, you know, that they're able to drop into a situation, and because they have some stuff built in that we've helped build together, you know, people get confused when you start talking about a men's movement, a masculine movement. They get real nervous about it. Like, we've all got, you know, secret handshakes, and we're meeting on the second level of every building that we're, you know, it's not that sort of thing that we're out to build inside the hangar. And it's the reason why we're being so, courageously vulnerable on these episodes, is because we want to send the signal to the people who are thinking about jumping into this hangar movement. We're a little bit different. A, we're guided by Jesus Christ. That's a big thing, you know. But there's a lot of guys who would say that, who have started a lot of things that it went really sideways pretty quickly. But what we're out for is to create men who are growing into the type of men that God originally designed them to be, that are able to move past historical traumas, big T traumas, little T traumas, are able to move past labels that other people have put on them. They're able to get past that first or second marriage, whatever it is that's going on in their life that they feel like has disqualified them, and help them see internally, there's an Abraham Lincoln in there somewhere, you know. Internally, there's a Jocko in there somewhere, if you want to talk about decision-making and courage, and to kind of help men mind that out, you know. And I think that's why our fascination with this truckie scene has been so strong, is because we're seeing a kid who made the right decision. He made the right decision to get back on. Well, I didn't make that right decision. I tried a lot of other things, and it took men kind of boxing me in the ears and telling me some really hard truths to even admit, you know, I'm walking past that corral about every 3 or 4 weeks and I can't even look at it. You know, I just go running to mom and grandmom and I hope that everything's okay, you know. So I think it's good for us to describe as we're closing this out, maybe the big takeaway for us personally. I know we've been dancing around this for the past couple of minutes here, but the big takeaways for us personally, that if season one is going to survive in our memories or through our life application, you know, what's that going to be?
Well, I don't want to oversimplify this, but I mean, to me, the overall takeaway from this whole season and all the episodes and discussions that went into it is that we all have a whole lot of Truckee in us at some point, right? Maybe you're past that in some areas, maybe some areas you're not, but ultimately as men, we're all still going to be facing something this week, next week, this month of, do I get on the horse again or not? Do I come back from this failure? And then bringing in the other people you talked about this season, it's easy to think, well, I need to grow up from being a Truckee to a John Wayne. But that's only going to take you so far. You know, you'll be Rooster Cogburn buried alone in Fort Smith, Arkansas, when we really need to be focused on being the John McCains. Equally courageous, go out and do great things. There's nothing wrong with wanting to be the John Wayne, but also look at, what do you do when you come home? What do you do when that gunfight's over? And can you go from being John Wayne in True Grit to Little House on the Prairie? You know, and that's what right looks like, honestly, right? You know, John McCain, not John Wayne.
Yeah.
John McCain is what we want to be. We want to go and do courageous things, change the world, be a part of history, but be able to come home and make a difference at home and carry that into the next generation and bring that strength home so that other people can flourish.
Yeah, very well said. Very well said. I can agree with that. I think if I were to take my number one, to drop it here, my number one would be, it is a reminder that I cannot go to the world of women for validation. And I think that's why my conversation with Cammie went the way that it went. Truckee wasn't going to get what he needed from his mom or from his grandmother, who his grandmother was, she was feisty, right? But I can't get it from the world of women. And then when I venture into that, I need to be aware that there are Franks out there who may be good intentioned, but can't give me what I need either. So this thing of validation, I think these last 10 episodes have helped me kind of close the book on that. It's not the man that I am anymore, looking for it from the world of women, and I don't need to go back there, as tempting as it may be.
What about you, Chase?
Mine's Truckee specific as well, but it's from the vantage point of like, you can't go through this one without community, but mainly someone ahead of you that's leading you or pointing out why the right path is the right path and correcting you when you try your best to go back to that path that you made the fork with, you know, that Justin was talking about. As much as you're going to want to, because a lot of times it's the easier path, there's some chiseling that has to go on and it's going to suck. You know, it's kind of like what I think you were talking about earlier in the episode, Ben, someone boxing you in the side of the ears, saying, you know, that, no.
Yeah.
It's just a reminder you can't fall back into that. You know, that's we didn't talk about it that much in this season, but whenever we did, that's the one that stuck out to me the most.
Yeah. Man, I knew you would pull out something like that. The why. That Roy was so good at telling Truckee the why.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes he didn't have to use a lot of words, but there was a why back there. Like, no, I know. You know,
yeah.
He was pretty good at that. So, yeah, man, that's a big one. So now I got to go watch it again.
Dang it.
You know. All right. So I think we could say Godless. That's a wrap. That's a wrap, right?
Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
Wait, Justin.
We're so proud of ourselves. Yeah. Right. Golf clap.
Oh, right in the mic.
Thank so you. here's the big thing. What's next? What's next for the Hanger in Seasons?
Like immediately next, or like, you know, what's like the cool thing coming?
Well, I think Justin brought up a good point. We need to do a better job describing to our listeners what we're up to.
Yeah.
So what comes immediately after this would be between seasons episodes, a few here and there.
Yeah.
That'll be probably topically based. We get, you know, hot under the collar about something. We just want to talk about it. Or something we feel like is going to make a difference in the masculine journey.
Yeah.
We'll sit down, we'll record that conversation, see how it goes.
Yeah.
Meanderings, if you will.
Yeah.
But we do have a larger plan than that.
Yes, we do.
Right?
Maybe.
Season two.
Wow.
Yeah. It comes after season one. See?
Typically.
I've been doing some reading about how this works.
Is there a theme?
Yes, there is a theme. Thank you for setting that up and moving this along. So the title for season two is In a Van with Elvis.
In a Van with Elvis?
In a Van with Elvis. Yeah. You know, we got to build the intrigue just a little bit. But general theme is the idea of journey. We use that word a lot, right? The masculine journey. So the idea of journey, famous journeys in history, also famous journeys in our own stories. I feel like it's going to give us an opportunity to dig just as deep into our own stories for the people that are listening as we did into this fictional character, Truckee, and his story. I feel like we have some valuable things to say. There's some stuff that we've lived through that I think it would be really awesome to share.
All right, let's do it.
In a Van with Elvis. Plus, it's a pretty cool story.
I look forward to it.
As do I.
Darn Skippy.
The end.